On this episode of the podcast, I sat down with Josh Martin. Josh started karate during primary school and trained for several years up to his brown belt. He then began high school and started focusing on his studies and found other interests. But the martial arts seed had been planted. Josh became interested in weightlifting and started focusing on nutrition. And after several years, he was introduced to jiu-jitsu and joined higher jiu-jitsu, and he hasn't looked back. He received his blue belt shortly after we sat down to record this episode, which is a testament to both his commitment and his dedication to jiu-jitsu. So tune in and enjoy.
Awesome.
We're live, and I'm here with Josh, and we haven't even started talking about the podcast yet, and he's already told me that I've immortalized his legacy. So, mate, I really appreciate that.
Oh, bro, we appreciate all the work you've done for us. You, without a doubt, every single person who's done a podcast is indefinitely being immortalized by you taking the time out of your day to help them and ask them their life story. It's awesome.
Thank you. I appreciate it. I have just as much fun as... Well, I hope that the people that listen have fun listening, and the people who come here to sit down and talk enjoy it as much as you know what I mean. But I enjoy it just the same. So
is that because we get to sing the song together that Danny writes, and Danny puts the song over the song that we sing together?
There will be no singing in this house.
That is my favorite part of the podcast, Danny's song.
Me too. It's actually pretty good. Hey, he does a great job. Well, we mentioned Danny. Danny, thank you for all the hard work you do with editing and the sounds and putting that all together. It's great. But let's get started on the actual topic here, which is your story. I understand that you started your first introduction to martial arts was karate at a young age. Was there sort of any like background or any purpose of why you actually started?
Yeah, without a doubt. I think... the reason why I started karate was when I was younger, I used to have quite a short temper in primary school and just get picked on by some people a little bit. And then I just like fight them. I used to beat the crap out of them. And then I think one day my parents were actually away. I was staying with some friends during the holidays, and we went to like a robotics camp, and some random kid picked on me, and I just tried to fight him. And I didn't know how to fight properly. I think I was punching him with like a hammer fist, and I busted up my knuckles real bad. And I had to go to the doctor because my knuckles were out of place. Like they shifted, and I think my knuckles are still banged up from that. And that's why my mum was like, enough is enough. You need to learn how to control your temper and fight properly. I think like miracle happened. Some guy knocked on the door and was like, hey, we're doing Beecroft karate in the scout hall up the road. Would you like to come? She's like, yep, done. Let's do it. You're going to karate. I'm taking you twice a week. You're going to learn to be put in your place, and you're going to learn how to fight properly.
So she's thinking a discipline, because you learning to fight means you may not even fight.
100%.
And then B, should you have to,
100%.
You'll know how to handle yourself.
I think it was 100% discipline.
Yeah.
Because she was a good strict mother, and she wanted me to be disciplined, and she wanted me to be raised correctly, and not have to be called to school every single term because I've gotten in a fight with someone.
Yeah.
And that was me when I was just leaving primary school, I think. So I was just starting year 7. I think just finishing 6th grade. So I did a year of karate, got into year 7. And yeah, that notion when everyone tells you, go into high school when the biggest, baddest kid picks on you.
Yeah.
Just fight him.
Yeah.
I think I took that a little bit out of context. I took that too literally. And he wasn't the biggest, baddest kid, but he was a big kid.
Yeah.
He pushed me around in front of the whole class, and I just threw a clean, right, straight punch at his delicate little cheekbone, and he fell to the floor, had a lovely big bruise, more than a black eye, on his face for the rest of the week. And I could say safely that no one ever picked on me for the rest of high school. And besides little tuffs with your mates where you get into disagreements and just sort of wrestle.
Wrestle with your friends.
Throw each other to the ground. I'm sure you've had a couple of
those. The winner
is
the person that got the last punch, regardless of how many punches they received prior to that one.
Exactly. Before your friends break it up and tell you, hey, your mate, stop that.
It's like, For, or it's whoever draws first blood is the winner.
Never took it that far, Brad. But I think maybe because I was training football in high school, I wasn't really in quite an aggressive sport. Like, I wouldn't say rugby is more aggressive, but I was just doing football. My mum kept me out of anything more aggressive because she knew I had quite a short temper.
Yeah.
So I just played football, had good fitness, used to do a bit of cross-country running, and that kept me out of trouble until I think I finished doing karate just before I got a brown belt, because they wanted me to come at least 4 days a week.
Yeah.
And I was getting driven to karate twice a week, and I was sort of getting a bit much
of an ask.
Yeah, it was too much to ask my parents, and I was sort of coming to that age where I'm okay, I'm 15, there's some nice girls around.
Yeah.
Maybe want to spend my time with them.
Yeah.
Instead of just going to karate. But karate was awesome. I had to say, it really put me in my place, because at the end of every session, we'd put mitts on, like gloves and foot pads, and we'd do contact sparring, starting off at 10%, and depending on your skill level, working up to maybe about, never go more than 80%, I'd say.
Yeah.
And there'd be girls who would put me in my place. I'd love it.
Yeah.
I'd come back and I'd be like, holy crap, this girl beat the shit out of me. I need to get better. And this skinny little blonde 20-year-old girl absolutely nailed me. And I'm on the floor and she's helping me up and she's teaching me how I can get better. And that philosophy really disciplined me, and just the strict regime of going twice a week, learning the kata, the moves you have to do, doing everything perfectly, sort of cemented the fact in me that martial arts is something that is respected. Mm-hmm. It's not something you should take out of line. And I learned my own strength as well, because I knew how to fight, and I knew that there were big scary 100-kilo men who would fight me in the afternoon, and I could sort of hold my own against them.
Mm-hmm.
And that taught me that, hey, if some kid, it actually happened in high school, some kid maybe in year 11, we had a verbal disagreement, he punched me in the face. And that punch was not hard enough that I'd want to react. I just stopped and I laughed at him and I didn't react.
Yeah.
I probably could have. I probably would have. I probably should have. But
probably could have, should have, would have, but you didn't.
But I didn't, because I was like, I might get in trouble. I might get myself expelled if I react and knock this kid out.
Yeah.
And that was awesome. I loved it. That's what karate taught me.
And so, and that was in high school, you said, and that's, you roughly did it for what, 3-4 years?
Yeah, about, I'd say close to 4 years.
Okay.
3 to 4 years, I think.
And what sort of stopped you from continuing at that point? Other than your parents obviously having to drive, you know, 4 days a week to get your brown belt.
I think it was like, I wanted to get my brown belt, I was going for it, I knew the kata, and they were like, you need to come get more like classes crossed off your card.
Right.
You can't just be coming twice a week. You need to come at least 3-4 times a week.
Yeah.
And I was like, hey, stuff this. I want to have fun. I want to go out with my friends. I want to ride my skateboard and BMX bike around.
Chase girls, as you said.
Yeah.
Just be like a, you know, like high school teenager kind of
just
thing.
Just be a kid. Go to the skate park.
Fair enough. And so what, like after that, you just ended up straight into soccer and, well, you said football, so straight into football and following those sorts of sports?
I just sort of dove into football a bit more, sort of worked on my fitness. I used to play in the wing, so I probably do a bit of cross-country running for fun. I actually did a, I don't think anyone knows about this, did a cross-country course in school, and two of my mates were two top runners,
mm-hmm.
and they actually lapped me, and I finished just behind them when they lapped me, and they were like, oh, you guys finished together? I was like, yeah. So I got into the next step of cross country.
So you got just a free pass when you're actually getting rolled.
And that actually pushed me. I was like, oh shit, I got this zone cross country coming up in a couple of months.
Mm.
I better train. So I'd actually put, that really made me put some effort in, train cross country quite hard. So
how'd you go in there in the one that mattered?
I think I was coming third last. I was coming last for all of it. I didn't train. I deserved to come last.
Oh, it put you in the right frame of mind, but then you didn't do any training.
I trained, but I wasn't good enough. I think 3 months isn't long enough to train for a 6K sprint. I was coming third last. I was coming last, and then towards the end, I was like, I'm not coming last. My dad was so proud of me. I'm going to come anything but last. And I dug deep, gave him my all.
Yeah.
And then I came 53rd out of 56. I was pretty happy.
That's all right. Some people just don't have those slow twitch muscle fibers or the fitness to go with it.
Exactly.
So you talked about, when we were having a chat before, you sort of talked about, like obviously high school, you're talking about girls and soccer or football. Sorry, I keep saying that.
Same thing.
Football to me is AFL, so it's hard for me to get away from that. You're talking about soccer and girls and just being like a kid. And when school ended, you obviously weren't really doing martial arts for quite some time, but do you want to tell us a little bit about the journey through like uni and things like that?
So I think I really got into the gym culture with my mates at school. Like they would pick me up after school, we'd hit the gym, we'd do our best and we would have fun. It was like a social gym culture.
Mm-hmm.
My best friend was actually a black belt in Taekwondo. So we'd go to the gym, we'd lift a couple of weights and then we'd go into the boxing room if the RPM spin class wasn't on. We had a couple of bags and we'd do some boxing and then I'd be like, hey, let's have a light spar. And then he'd probably punch me in the stomach or roundhouse kick the shit out of me. And I'd be like, no more. I'm winded after like 5 to 10 seconds. So that sort of ended my martial arts until I was getting probably up until jiu-jitsu. But before that, I really got stuck into university. I started off with medical science.
Mm-hmm.
And I was bartending and working at a supplement store.
Yeah.
And that was awesome for my supplement store career because all the like cellular biology, human pathology, physiology really gave me the knowledge to sell the supplements and learn the technicalities of like what was in the supplements, learn all the chemicals, learn what I was selling to people. And I was making some good sales. My boss was happy. He was giving me heaps of free supplements. It was quite nice.
Yeah. You were telling me about, obviously you were real heavy in the gym and you were talking about how you were taking a lot of supplements because you weren't paying for them, but yeah. Your mates as well were taking supplements, but not the same supplements.
I actually got free rein to the expired supplements in the back room.
Okay.
So when I first started, the boss was like, I want you to clear out the back room. Organized that and I was like, what are you doing with all these 3-4 year old expired supplements? And he's like, oh, I can chuck them out. I was like, can I take them? I free reign to BCAAs, pre-workouts, intra-workouts, anything I wanted, I took home. And I was just smashing all these supplements, going hard, giving it to my friends. And then my friends sort of went for an alternative supplement. I'm sure we can say what that is, something you inject in yourself. And I was petrified needles, so I was like, none of that.
Yeah.
I'm going to take these supplements because the guys on the pack, Ronnie Coleman, he's huge. He advertises this supplement. Surely he takes it. I was quick to realize that he definitely doesn't take those type of supplements. And all the supplements that you put in yourself aren't that different to a coffee. You might get a couple pumps from creatine. Besides that, agmatine sulfate, anything else that gives you pumps, make you look huge is only temporary.
Yeah.
And when you stop paying $60 a month, 2 months for it, you're going to be like, hey, where's my muscles gone?
It changes that quickly.
Yeah, so you sort of lose your pumps. When you go to the gym, you get good pumps. So it's sort of like faster dilation, increases the blood flow to your muscles.
Yeah.
And you look at yourself in the mirror, you're like, oh, fuck yeah, I look awesome. I look huge. And then you stop going to the gym for a little bit and all your pumps go away and you're like, this is not good.
Yeah.
And That's made me realize also the fact that I never saw one person who looked like Ronnie Coleman walk into the supplement store buy supplements, except the odd person who'd come in with some man boobies and buy some estrogen blockers because he'd accidentally been given some steroids from a Bankstown supplement store and get some gyno, which is when you get man boobs.
Right.
And you need to take an estrogen blocker to stop
offset it.
To offset it. So yeah. When you take testosterone, it shuts down your body's natural testosterone development. When you stop taking it, the estrogen sort of goes a bit out of whack and gets a bit higher than the natural testosterone because the natural testosterone needs to reproduce itself.
Yeah.
And it happens in a slow process because your body's going, oh, wow, I'm getting 4,000 times the amount of testosterone than I normally am.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden it stops. And then this poor guy's coming with man boobs and he's bought that. But besides that, no one quite looking like Jay Cutler, Ronnie Coleman, the big guys.
Yeah, is coming to the gym trying to buy the supplements that they get paid to sell on Instagram.
Exactly. And that made me realize maybe I should just take a coffee and some creatine and go to the gym.
Yeah. You're talking about, I mean, obviously your degree makes a lot of sense that nutrition would be something that you have a good background knowledge on, or at least at a base level anyway. What sort of like nutritional plan did you have? Were you like real serious about your nutrition when you were training in the gym?
I'll put it this way. So I was going to university with some really smart kids. I started off with a medical science degree. And in that degree, I made quite a lot of friends. We'd sit and have lunch together. And one day I was just eating everything. Like as much food as I can put into myself, I was putting into myself. It doesn't matter what it was, I would eat it. And one day, one of my mates was quite intelligent, high distinction average kid, was like, what are you doing? You can't eat four tins of tuna and a pack of brown rice for lunch. You're going to get fat. I was like, looking at myself, I'm like, yeah, I'm quite a bit fat. He's like, tell me about it. And he's like, everything is calories in to calories out. Doesn't matter if you're eating clean calories. If you're eating 4,000 calories a day of clean calories and you're only burning 3,000, you're in a caloric excess of 1,000.
Mm-hmm.
And that made me realize, hey, maybe I should sort of look into this a bit more. And I sort of got into the field of calorie counting and healthy eating at the same time. So I love cooking. That sort of brought me down the road of maybe I should like make myself some beautiful, nutritious food. The more vitamins, the more nutrients, the better. And count the calories in that. And I got into the culture of shredding for stereo, I could say.
Shred for stereo, bra.
So we'd
what are you doing on the weekend? Shredding for stereo.
We'd hit the sauna, drop down to 2,000 calories a day. And then in the on season, probably bump it up to about 3,000 and just hit the gym. And then obviously my friends who were on the naughty supplements were getting bigger and getting thinner quite quicker than me. But I think I used my scientific knowledge and my own principles to get to where I needed to be the hard way.
Yeah.
Which is quite fun. It was really challenging, I have to say. But it was definitely worth it.
How do you feel about stereo being shut down now?
Good.
Good. True. So are you still sort of doing any gym at the moment, or are you more focused strictly on jiu-jitsu? I mean, I know we're not quite at that stage yet in the story, but are you training in the gym at all?
I think over the past year of doing jiu-jitsu, I've been in a consummate dichotomy with my self-image and jiu-jitsu, because of course I want to learn. I want to tap you out. I want to do my best to grow myself for jiu-jitsu, which takes commitment. It takes 5-6 days a week if you want to learn and want to grow. But you can't, you can, but it's hard to fit in exercise to that.
Yeah.
So I'll just binge gym, be happy with my self-image, and then go to jiu-jitsu and then realize, oh, I've sort of forgotten some of the basic techniques. So I've been binging jiu-jitsu over the past year, getting to where I need to be and sort of cutting back on the gym quite a bit, because at the end of the day, what's the point of having big muscles
if you
can't use them, right?
Yeah.
And the main thing is jiu-jitsu is amazing the way that you're learning and you're exercising. In the gym, you're just exercising. You're not using your mind.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. Like, that's the thing. It makes it so much easier when there's purpose behind it. Because that's why you see a lot of people who, like, join the gym. They might be in the gym training for 6 months, might even be a New Year's resolution or something like that. And if it's not something they're committed to or enjoy, it's only sustainable to it for a certain period of time before they, like, usually it's just they lose interest, right? Whereas if you're doing something like jiu-jitsu, you can, like, it's never ending on how interesting it is, right?
Without a doubt. And that's what has kept me in jiu-jitsu, because I've always been like an academic, you could say. I loved keeping my mind active and my body active at the same time. And jiu-jitsu is just the perfect fit for me. I couldn't imagine anything else being so perfect, because there's so much to learn. There's always something to learn. And you leave class thinking about jiu-jitsu and thinking about how you can improve. And you've just sweated on a hot day, a kilo or a kilo and a half of sweat in your gi. And you go home, you can eat whatever you want, and you can still stay pretty lean and you can maintain a four pack. And yeah, your muscles are not as big, but you're not as sore the next day if you're rolling correctly. And you're not as tight, and you don't have knots in your back, you don't have knots in your lats, just from being tense and just pumping iron. So that's why I got to say that finding the balance between gym and jiu-jitsu is quite hard, but it is personal at the end of the day, and whatever balance you do find would suit the life that you want to live.
Yeah, that's true. Especially if you enjoy it. I mean, I've found like something that I've got exposed to through jiu-jitsu is yoga. Obviously, the way John teaches, like, you know, our warm-ups and stuff, that was probably the start of it for me. And we have like a yoga class one day a week in my work at RSM. And I originally wasn't going to that because I was just like, ah, I'd rather just work or enjoy my lunch break kind of thing. Nothing against yoga. But then we started doing it in the gym and I was like, geez, this really is kind of setting the mood before the class and I'm enjoying this. And it kind of, it makes sense. It's like very similar. So I started going to that and that's my sort of supplement with jiu-jitsu at this stage, just a little bit of yoga, like one day a week plus, you know, 20 minutes across the week of the yoga we do in our class.
I think yoga is amazing. I think the yoga that John teaches us at the start of class is essential because just like Pedro Sauer says, before someone else moves you, you got to move yourself.
Yeah, I like that. That's true. He does say that. So I guess, the thing about jiu-jitsu, which leads me into the next sort of thing you're going to talk about, is that at the end of the day, you know, you're learning an art, which is self-defense. And then, so that's something that's practical outside of that environment as well. You know, like lifting weights and getting strong is one thing. And I guess being strong outside of that environment is useful, has its, you know, it's useful. But, you know, in a self-defense situation, if you've got something like jiu-jitsu, I'd probably think that that's better. And you've telling me you've had a couple of incidences where, I think, since jiu-jitsu.
Oh, without a doubt. I've got to say another thing as well, that with jiu-jitsu, you're not only training a body, you're training a mind as well. And, like, you can go to the gym, you can train your body, but you also need to equally train your mind. Like, a good day is when you've trained your body and you've trained your mind through some sort of either mindfulness activity such as yoga or even jiu-jitsu, because without even realizing it, when you're rolling with a higher belt such as you or Maddie or Oscar and they're absolutely dominating you, you're being mindful and you're training your mind to stay calm and relax and be at peace with what's going on and not just thrash like a crazy fish out of water and let me
rephrase that question, or actually change that question altogether. I was going to ask you about one of the self-defense incidences that you've had to encounter or you've been encountered with, but let's put that on the back burners for now.
Yeah,
because you've said mindfulness.
Yep.
And you're talking about that now and relating it to jiu-jitsu. Yep. Because you do jiu-jitsu, but prior to starting jiu-jitsu, you were sort of, I don't know, is it practicing mindfulness? What's the, how would you explain it? You told me you sort of had an interest in that area and you had a few experiences.
So my mom had a close friend who was sort of on the path to mindfulness, and now she's actually joining a Buddhist monastery and becoming a Buddhist monk.
Mm-hmm.
And she would take us to her place once a week and we'd do a bit of meditation. I think that was just sort of to help me with high school. I wasn't sort of coping too well with year 12 exams. So I was just trying to cram really hard. Yep. And she's like, you gotta relax, find mindfulness, and we'll just go meditate for an hour once a week. And then one of my friends did this course called Vipassana in the Blue Mountains. It's a 10-day meditation course. So you wake up at 4:30, you get 3 meals a day, all vegan, and you take oaths of sort of the simple oaths, so silence, celibacy, can't look people in the eye. I forgot what the rest of them are, but it's like the oaths that a monk would take over the week, and you practice the foundations of meditation.
Mm-hmm.
So you go to a hall with, there's like 50 guys on one side, 50 girls on the other side, mainly older people in their 30s, quite a lot of women as well. And you just meditate. You sit there on a cushion, cross-legged, and you're just told to focus on your breath the first few days. There'd be like a video, instructional video at nighttime. And all day, every day, there'd be free mindfulness time to walk around, but you'd have times where you would set to sit in the hall and meditate. And you just sit there and you meditate. And you look around, see what everyone else is doing. But at the end of the day, you just like really focus on yourself.
Mm.
And you're told to label, like, so you're sitting there, you're meditating, and your knees are hurting because you're sitting cross-legged for 15 minutes and your mind's wandering, and you have to come back to your breath and sort of ingrain in yourself the mantra of impermanence. So all week, I got a tattoo on my ankle that says impermanence, actually. Okay. After that course. And the mantra of impermanence ties into the sensations of your body.
Right.
So you're sitting there and your hips hurt, your knees hurt, And you just got to tell yourself that this sensation isn't permanent and the sensation will arise and will pass away. And it's easier said than done.
Yeah, yeah.
But the more you do it, it's like a snowball effect. And after 10 days of hardcore meditation, I put it, and just sitting there and telling yourself that this is not pain, this is not pleasure. Like, you sit there and sometimes you feel like pure ecstasy. You feel like tingles around your entire body. And the second you're like, oh, this feels good, something clicks and it goes away.
Yeah.
Similar to the pain. When you feel pain, you don't say it's pain, you say it's sensation. And you just focus on it. You say, okay, this is pain I feel in my knee. It will arise and it will pass away. And that ties to... And that building that foundation sort of like helps you... It says it helps you integrate into modern life. If you keep up the practice of meditation. And throughout university, I was doing that as well.
Mm-hmm.
And that was awesome. It's like, I can give you a little example. Like, if I'm walking at home and I stub my toe without going, ow, 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 like a switch just flicks in my mind automatically.
Yeah.
And something just says impermanence. It just says it's impermanent. And then instead of going, ow, 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 I just say, it's just a sensation, it will go away. And that sort of helps with everything else. Like, it even tied into jiu-jitsu. When you got some big sweaty guy on top of you, he's in north south, it's not nice.
Mm. But yeah, anyway, yeah, it's not nice.
I'm sure it's happened to you many a times, Brad. But it's just like a switch flicks inside of me and just says, "Hey, this isn't permanent. Just stay calm, relax."
Yeah.
Like, it's not going to be north south forever. And hey, you can't do anything from here. That's really going to hurt me because I know what it's going to do next. And that foundation of mindfulness. Maybe not to such an extremity as what I did, where it's 10 days of intense meditation.
Yeah.
Really helps you throughout life and even through jiu-jitsu as well, because at jiu-jitsu, you got to stay calm. If you're angry, if you're fighting people, you're not really going to do much.
Do you think that there's any... That's like... Well, that's interesting because, you know, like you said, you don't need to go on a 10-day mindfulness retreat in order to practice it or to get benefits from it.
Yeah.
You could even say for people who have zero interest in that sort of thing whatsoever, which would be a lot of people, I'm sure. But even the, you know, the 10 minutes of yoga we do, you know, you shut down the mind, you just focus on your breath, you feel your breath like up and down your body. And John says, like, do a body scan, talks same about principle, it.
Yeah.
It's only 10 minutes. That's easy to do. But I mean, so many times I've left work stressed, jump on the mats, lay down, open my arms out, spread my legs, start breathing. By the time we stop and we start doing drills or start doing whatever it is that we do, I'm like, I'm just like, work doesn't matter anymore. I'm thinking about jiu-jitsu for 2 hours. Do you know what I mean?
That's the best thing about jiu-jitsu.
And that's 10 minutes, 20 minutes. I mean, that's nothing. It's like it's beneficial for everyone.
I can't say how much. I'm sure everyone feels the same way. The 30 seconds, the 10 seconds that John sits there and tells you just relax and just breathe. And that obviously changes everyone's day. I know it changes your day. I know it changes mine. And even that 30 seconds of mindfulness builds up over time to make you a better person.
Mm-hmm.
And hopefully it helps you stay calm at jiu-jitsu as well. It makes me stay calm at jiu-jitsu. It grounds me. And ties me back into...
I think there is a little... I mean, if we're sounding like... I don't want to sound preachy, but I think there is a little... To an extent, a little bit of mindfulness in jiu-jitsu as well. In it, like, it's just built in it. Because you... As you learn, you're constantly... Like, you understanding... Like you said, someone might be in north-south. When you're a white belt and it's uncomfortable, you not necessarily have to be a white belt, but when let's just say inexperienced, you're trying to like throw that person off because you feel like you're in a vulnerable position. But if you know what they can and can't do to you, like you said, you automatically are relaxed because you're like, well, this might suck, but it's going to pass and I know I'm safe. I'm not going to die.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? That's the thing. I'm not going to die.
Exactly. And you can sit there in north south with a smile on your face and go, hey, I can stick my foot in your belt, throw you over and armbar you straight away.
I've taught that class.
I love
it. The over the top foot from north south to armbar. That was when John was in Brazil.
It's one of my favorite things because you're going from the worst position to the best straight away.
That's a good one. So Where would you go from there? So how old were you when you were doing this mindfulness retreat?
I think I did it when I was 19 years old. So I did a year of university.
Yeah.
I started off with medical science and that was pretty hard.
Yeah.
I didn't do much science in high school, but I loved science. And I just thought, hey, I'm just going to dive into the deep end. I'm going to do it. And I was sort of forced into it. It's like, as my parents are like, hey, Josh, you have to go to university. Doesn't matter what you do, do it. I sort of just picked science degree, did it. And when I went to the mindfulness course, I learned more about myself, my whole life in 10 days than I have in 18 years, 19 years. And that's what made me realize, hey, maybe I shouldn't be doing medical science. Maybe I should do a job that I love, a job that I can help the world, and a job that I can, hey, make some good cash off it as well.
Yeah.
Took some time, found a good job, found a good career path, I should say, in the environmental biology field. So I picked my majors. I was lucky enough to go to UTS where you can pick all your sub majors. I just picked a lot of marine biology, biology and environmental science majors that took me in that path.
Yep.
And I've never looked back. I've loved it.
What was the change in, environmental biology and the marine biology? Like obviously it's a different degree, but what was it that you got more out of, I guess, that kept the interest? And I mean, do you have any sort of experiences from your uni days?
Oh, without
even it. Whether it doesn't even need to be martial arts, like any just cool stories from that period? Because I'm sure there's some there.
Without a doubt, I've had some cool lecturers who have sort of made, I'm sure more than me, the whole class just being like, hey, we're going to make a difference in the world. Like, if we don't, the world's going to be fucked. We're going to make a difference. And hey, we can make some good cash off it as well.
Mm.
So you can go home, do a good job, make some good money and go to bed at night and die in 60 years, knowing that you've made a difference in the world and you've done your best and you can have a clean conscience when you pass away. And that's sort of what took me into that degree. And I made a mad bunch of friends, like crazy friends. We spent 2 weeks in Heron Island in the Great Barrier Reef.
Mm-hmm.
It's an isolated island about 90 kilometers out of Gladstone, which is about 1 hour from Queensland. It's like a dot in a massive coral reef. So it's like a dot on your hand, and the hand is the coral reef.
Yeah.
And the dot is maybe like a grain of sand. So you're in this amazing coral reef, one of the best coral reefs in my opinion, in the Great Barrier Reef. And we did two weeks.
It's one of the greatest coral reefs in the world.
It's the best thing we can see from space. We did some research there for 2 weeks, and we're studying coral reef ecosystems. So one day we swam out as a class to the end of the reef, and there was one of the people, like we swam out for maybe 40 minutes.
Yeah.
And the tide sort of falls off the reef and comes back up. So when the tide goes off the reef, you can walk out to the end of the reef and it's up to your ankles. When the tide comes back up, it's about 2-3 meters high. So one day we all swam out together just to see these crazy brain coral. And one person ducks their head up. We're just snorkels, wetsuits on because it's pretty cold. Someone's like, hey, I think I saw a tiger shark. I saw a stripy shark. And these things fucking chomp turtles. So we lost 10 of our classmates that day. I'm kidding.
That's good.
We just have to stay calm and just swim back together as a group and stay in the middle. So if you were in the corners.
Stay in the middle. Yeah.
It's one of those things. But another day we were collecting little shells for research and started off, the tide was about to our waist and was coming back in slowly. And someone's like, hey, I've just seen this shark. Its head is probably like thicker than a tire. Like thicker than the width of a big like truck tire. And we're like, hey, that's a fucking bull shark. So we've just been in the water for the past like hour collecting something to do research on, which is pointless anyway, with the bull shark. And then we still have to collect this research because by the end of the day, we have to do a presentation on it, the migration of these little shells. And we were like, you know what? Maybe we shouldn't risk our lives getting back in the water with the bull shark swimming around. Maybe we should just fudge our results. And that's one of the things that sort of, those are probably the craziest things that happen in university amongst others, but
yeah,
some pretty cool stories.
There you go. You talked about the mindfulness and like your experience in the mountains you've had an experience in the mountains, right? Was that the same?
That was in the mountains, yeah.
Oh, right. And that's sort of, okay. So that ties in with jiu-jitsu in a way is what you were saying. Following, I guess, uni, you finish your degree. And obviously at this point you hadn't even started jiu-jitsu. This is all sort of hindsight discussion, right?
Yeah.
Currently. And I guess getting back into striking, you said you started a bit of boxing.
Yeah, I said boxing just to keep fit. It was just an awesome group of guys at the city gym. And we just had fun, was staying fit. But it was quite mundane, it's quite repetitive. It was just sort of combinations, movements, and I was getting bored after a while.
Mm-hmm.
I actually got a free trial when I was working at the supplement store. I could sweet talk anyone to anything, actually. Some lady came and was like, "We're advertising the UFC Sydney gym on Kent Street. Queen leaves some flyers here." And I was like, "Yeah, sure, if I can get the membership." And I went down to the UFC gym. She's like, "You can have 3 months membership." I went for one class and it was just kickboxing. I was like, "This is boring." Never went back. In hindsight, I wish I did. But actually, I was bartending at some bars in Darling Harbour, and one of my mates would have drinks after work every day, and he was raving about jiu-jitsu. He was like, X amount of fights, I don't know if his percentages are right, it's like 9 out of 10 fights end up on the ground, and all this stuff. Is that correct?
I don't know the percentages, but a lot of street fights end up on the ground. Exactly. Yeah, for sure.
And he was raving about jiu-jitsu, and like, we'd finish work, he'd have a couple of beers, and he'd be like, "I'm off to jiu-jitsu." I was like, "What is this place? You can have some beers and go train? Like, what is this?" His name's Arthur. I don't know if anyone remembers him. He's quite tan. Looks quite a lot like me. Had a bit of a beard. It's probably about 2 years ago, 2.5 years ago from now. He took me to a class one day at Higher Jiu-Jitsu.
Yeah.
And I got on. John gave me a gi to wear. And we were doing like Uber escapes. And I was rolling with him, and I was just like absolutely dominating him, and I was having fun. I could escape, and I was like, "This is awesome." And then we're doing, I think, Komoras as well, and this girl, I don't know if she was a blue belt or a white belt, and she was absolutely dominating me. I was like, "This sport is crazy. How can some skinny little girl beat the crap out of me in some like weird submission method?" I was like, this is nuts.
Yeah.
And then I think that was on my mind for a year after, and I moved up the road to Surry Hills, and this place was down the road, and I was bored with the gym. I was going back to the gym again. I got a bit bored. I was like, I need to keep my mind active. It's like, hey, I'll give it a try.
Yeah.
I came down for a couple classes, and I had so much fun, and I haven't left since.
How long have you been training now?
I think a year and 1 month now.
Yeah, but you've been real consistent in that time, hey?
Yeah, like I said before, I've had constant fights with me and the gym and jiu-jitsu. I've just been wanting to go to the gym and then binge at the gym and come back to jiu-jitsu. But at the end of the day, like, some days I come like 5-6 times a week and I love it.
Yeah.
I don't look back.
Yeah, it's addictive, eh?
Yeah.
It's addictive to the point where you're just like, I'm so sore, I shouldn't be going today. And then you'll still go sometimes. That's why I try and limit it to 3, maybe 4 days a week. I feel like that's a sweet spot for me. Any more than 4 days and I end up just like, I end up sore.
So, I was actually...
Because I'm an old man, you know, like I'm just, my body's breaking apart, you know, all that stuff.
You see your grey hairs popping up.
Yeah,
bro,
man, there's way too many. Come on, man, don't say that kind of stuff. You're out of line.
I actually had this conversation with Matt. Matt was telling me, Purple Belt Matt.
Yeah.
Matt Flameboy. I don't actually remember his last name.
Voger Mason.
Matt Voger Mason.
Yeah.
We were having a good conversation one afternoon. He was telling me, he's like, you train 3 days a week. At the end of the year, you've trained 150 times a year. If you train 5 days a week, you've trained 250 times a year. Thank you. And if you train 3 days a week at 100%, you've trained 150 times a year. If you train 5 days a week at 75%, you've trained 100 times more than that guy who's giving 100% and going to bed crippling in pain every night because he's just gotten the shit beat out of him because he's going 100%.
Mm.
So it was like, drop the percentage, train more, you'll learn more. And ever since Matt did, gotta say, Matt, I love you for more than that reason. But ever since Matt told me that, my jiu-jitsu has just gone uphill from there. And besides the fact that when I first came, there were some people who used to just beat the crap out of me, and I used to go home, want to come back and fight 100% with them.
Yeah. But, yeah, I'll get him next time.
Yeah.
You're thinking you're going to, you know, psych yourself up.
I'd be like, who's this nerdy guy? Like, I'm like, I can take him, but nah. Like, under the gi, he's probably got a bit of muscle. And he looks quite innocent and weak, but he knows the technique. And yeah, I thought I was strong, but I wasn't.
Yeah. It's like you learn how to, Matt's got the right attitude. That's definitely the right attitude. You learn sort of early on, you might try and force your way through things, and like, that only gets you so far.
Yeah.
As soon as someone has technique, and their technique might only just be so that they can survive the flurry that you can give them.
Yeah.
They might not be able to like withstand it completely, but if they can just survive it for like the minute that you're like giving everything, and yeah, then you're gassed, and then they just start, the scales tip in their favor.
That's what I like to do, actually.
Yeah, and then it's like, then they're using jiu-jitsu, and then like, yeah, it's effortless.
Yeah, without a doubt.
So you've been here for a year now, over a year, you've been real consistent. You're going up for your blue belt in December, December 15th, right?
Yeah, with Benny, Emma, Aaron, and Dave.
Yeah, how are you feeling about that? Are you nervous, excited? How are you feeling?
I'm excited. I didn't think I'd actually be going for it, so I'm actually really excited.
Yeah.
And I got to say, it's a group effort. Dave actually said this to me. It's like, we're a team. We do everything together. We learn together. And he's like, we couldn't do it without each other. Because, like, Dave catches me after class sometimes, and he's like, hey, let's do... I do this with Gavin as well, actually.
Mm.
We go 3-3-3, so mount, side control, and guard. We'll do 3 submissions each, just to concrete them in.
Yep.
And it's just like, hey, you're going for your blue belt in 2 weeks. It's like, oh, we've been training this for the past months. We do this for fun.
Yeah.
And now we're putting it to the test. Awesome. I love it. I live for this. It's like, some people love tests and love going under pressure. I love that. It's just putting it to use.
Yeah.
And it's just a testament to how good of a school we are, because all you boys, I couldn't do it without, like, you, Brandon, Maddie, Oscar, like, Jason, like, all the blue belts, Danny especially as well.
Mm.
Like, they take the time. Like, Danny will be like, hey, I'll come early. I'll help you guys out. Like, we can't appreciate that any more than, like, so much appreciation, because, like, you guys are helping us. And it's without you guys, we wouldn't be where we are today. And now we're doing that with the white belts. We see these one stripes come in and we help them. I go home with that warm, fuzzy feeling in me. Like, oh, I've learned a lot today.
Yeah.
And I've helped someone today.
Yeah.
I've had a good day. And I've sweated a kilo.
It's good, hey?
Yeah. I've got a 4-pack. I've helped someone. I've learned.
It's like, yeah, like, you're saying these things and it's like, you know, you're looking up to the blue belts kind of thing, saying like, hey, thanks. And that comes from the perspective of, you know, obviously we're in a position to help you because we've literally done this test and we've been doing it a little bit longer. So we've done that test, passed that test. We've got the blue belt kind of thing. So we can help you with it.
Yeah.
And we bring you along in the training path. You know, you follow us up sort of thing. Everyone follows each other up the ladder. Like, we're still looking up at the people above us, and not that it's a hierarchy at all, but in terms of like the belt progression, you know, it is a journey uphill sort of thing.
Yeah.
It's a very fucking big hill too.
We're like a big Italian family. Let's get a big brother. I was going to say Nick as well. Nick's insane.
But the point I'm trying to make is Nick's so awesome. Methodical. I'm super happy to see him go through his purple belt. Like, I really am.
We rolled once. He had an injured hand and he had like one hand in his belt, and even Dane did this as well. He did just destroy me with one hand. I was like, wow, you guys are so skillful.
Oscar does it to everyone. He does it with no hands.
Oscar's amazing. Words can't describe the skill and the level he teaches us. We have so much appreciation for Oscar. Even Maddie as well, they're the best.
It's good. I guess the point I'm trying to make, without trying to talk everyone up too much, is like, you know, you're going to get your blue belt. Hopefully it all goes well. And all of you, hopefully every single one of you people that are going up for it will get it. And then, you know, in 6 months' time, the next batch of people that are like close now but not quite there, you know, they'll be going up for it with the next grading. And you guys will be in a position to be like, hey, we've just done this test like 6 months ago. Come join me. And you'll be Danny. You'll be helping the next guy.
Without a doubt. Because people like Danny show us the love that someone's showing him, obviously.
Yeah, and exactly.
Like, when it comes to like Andy, Gav, like people like that, like I'll 100% help him out. Like, without, that's just respect. That's just the community we John's created for us.
It's like the gym's got, like, the community's great, and there's like layers to it. Like, you know, when you look at it from a, if you look at it from a belt perspective, there's a lot more white belts, and there's a few blue belts, a couple of purple belts, and there's like one brown belt. But if we, if everyone thinks forward like a couple of years, there's going to be, you know, a couple of brown belts, there'll be a few purple belts, there'll be a lot of blue belts, and then there'll be a heap of white belts.
Yeah.
And it's just going to keep getting thicker and thicker, like the layers will get deeper.
And that's the goal, because then we have more people to help out and we have more friends at the end of the day.
Because
we're spending, I couldn't think of a better way to spend my afternoons like than with you guys. It's just awesome. Like, I wouldn't rather sit at home and watch TV. I'd rather have some fun.
Don't say that, man, because I just... Don't say that, because I won't go home.
That's my plan all along, Brad. I was, they told me from the start to keep here.
Yeah, well, that's the way it's trending. No. I gotta go. But, hey, I want to ask you, before we wrap up, you sort of said that there was a couple of self-defense incidences. You haven't even told me what they are. You just mentioned it. But do you want to share any of those?
Yeah. So when I started jiu-jitsu, I was a year ago from now. So August.
Yep.
August, that was in August last year. I went to Thailand with my mates, boys trip for New Year's. One of my mates, we're in this pub, had a bit too much to drink. We need to get a taxi home. So he walked out to the taxi. He was banging on the doors, being a bit intoxicated, being a bit aggressive. Thai drinks, a bit of ethanol instead of vodka, so he was just a bit over the edge. And the taxi driver got out. He was at the taxi stand, actually, and pushed him to the ground. Like, "Get off, you drunk idiot." In Thai, I assume that's what he said. And my friend got up, pushed him back. And my friend, he has a broken jaw. He had a broken jaw. He's got a titanium plate in his jaw. He's got like a glass jaw now.
Right.
He's like, we've been mates since we're eight. He's a bit sloppy, but he's like a little brother to me. They're getting a bit of a scuffle, and the taxi drivers from the rank come out, and they start sort of getting on him. I'm like, you know what? Good for you. Like, he's sort of like backing up, defending himself, like not really fighting. And they come out with batons, and they start building the crap out of him. My mate runs in. And then my mate's getting the shit belted out of him as well. I was like, you know what? You're deserving. You're not really getting hurt. There's a bunch of little guys. I was like, you deserve it. Like, I love you, but I'm like your big brother. You're like, you ask for a fight, you deserve to get hit. And then corner of my eye, this one guy comes out, smash, bottle of whiskey, glass bottle, comes into the fight. I was like, fuck, this is not like...
This is going downhill quickly.
Yeah. I run in, push the people away, defend my head, like a defense.
Yep.
Grab my mate, take him away, and we took him away, put him in a different taxi, we drove him away. He's adrenaline's pumping through him. He wants to come back. He wants to fight these guys. And I was like, no, you can't go back. We're going to get killed. Like, these guys are fucking mafia gangster. No, who the hell they are. We're going to get killed. Like, what are you doing? I, on asphalt, tackle him to the ground, put him in a knee ride position, hold him there. I'm like, I'm so upset because he's my good mate. And then eventually calm down. But it's the skills I learned jiu-jitsu, like stay calm, watch it out. Like, it's not, nothing bad's happening. I don't need to engage. And then something bad happened, glass bottle, that's deadly.
Yep.
Like, batons, he's getting hit like in the back. They're not hitting his head. There's a lot of people around watching, like, yep. He deserves it. Like,
they just kind of give him a little, roughing him up.
Yeah, he needs to, like, I'm not going to help him. Like, you get yourself
like at one point, you had a baton in your hand and you were chipping at him too.
don't tell him that. Anyway, what I told you at dinner stays at dinner. that's not true. But yeah, and then when I saw the glass come out, I just clicked, adrenaline coursing through my veins, grabbed my mate, we got out of there. But then, yeah, that was it. And that was 3 months into jiu-jitsu, and I was like, what I learned from that is, don't wear thongs on a night out, because your base isn't that good in thongs.
That's true.
But it's Thailand, it's 35 degrees, so you know what, you can wear thongs if you...
Yeah. Just don't fight any cab drivers, because apparently they're all in a gang.
Oh, we're told that there could be mafia and you could end up dead, so we're like, that was a good experience. But recently, actually, so I live in Surry Hills, live up the road from the Surry Hills police station, the big police station. I had some dinner with some mates, I had quite a bit of soju to drink, I was walking home, and there was two people in the park adjacent to the police station, And it was a guy, his girlfriend, his mate. His mate was vomiting, projectile vomiting everywhere. And I had quite a bit of surgery, so I thought this was funny. So I walked past and very disrespectfully, I laughed. His mate got up and started pushing me. It was like, do you want to laugh? Do you want to go? Do you want to go? And I was in a good mood. Like, I had quite a bit of soju and fried chicken. Like, how could I not be in a good mood?
Yeah, okay.
And in my mind, I was like, you know what? Like, I could engage, but there's a police station behind me.
Mm.
That's the worst thing I could possibly do. I do not want to engage in a fight next to a police station.
Yeah.
So my mind clicks into jiu-jitsu and mindfulness, prayer position. I slap my hands together. I'm like, please, mate, I don't want to fight. I just want peace and love. But in the back of my mind, I was like, you throw a right hook, I'm going to throw you, I'm going to hip throw the shit out of you, and I'm going to hold you there. I'm probably going to wet willy the shit out of you until you learn your lesson. And his
submission
girl,
via wet willy.
Oh, probably. I wasn't going to hurt him because there's a cop station off the road, but I would have just held him in a knee ride, and then his girlfriend actually came and broke it up. And when I was going, hey, mate, hands together, I just want peace and love, I don't want to fight, he sort of got really confused. He was like, what's going on here? Like, he's standing his ground. He's not being aggressive. And his girlfriend's like, please don't fight him. Please don't fight him. And I was just like, please throw a punch at me. But at the same time, I was like, I was vocalizing peace and love, mate. I just want peace and love.
Yeah.
I was just walking through the park. I want to get home. Yeah. And all I kept repeating is, I just want peace and love. And I was in the prayer position, just waiting, just begging him to throw that right hand, but he didn't. And it de-escalated from there. But in the back of my mind, I was like, hey, I've been doing this for 10 months now. I want to see if this works.
Yeah.
There's no one around. It's a park, one-on-one, next to a police station, not ideal. But what came out, like the devil in me, the soju devil in the back of my mind, the intoxicated soju devil was like, hey, let's fight. But my mantra, what came out was pure kindness and pure peace.
Yeah.
And I think that's what the jiu-jitsu has given me and the mindfulness has given me, that the skill to avoid a fight, because no one wants a criminal conviction.
That's true. And I mean, hey, even if you're, you know, you did the right thing, like on a physical level, but even if that, like, you know, like you said, the devil in the back of your mind, the soju devil, you know, even if that's saying like, you know, kill, like, you know, obviously it wasn't saying that, but if you're in a position where you're trying to de-escalate, but at the same time, underneath everything, you're 100% ready.
Yeah.
That's like, that's ideal. Because everyone might be listening going like, you know, he was wanting the fight and hoping that it came to fruition.
No way.
But really what's happening is that you're consciously aware that like, if this happens, you're prepared and ready and you're not going to like hesitate.
Without a grab.
And you're not looking for it. You're not physically trying to encourage it because you're peace and love.
Yeah.
But if it goes down, you're not going to be surprised.
Yeah.
You're going to be ready.
I was standing my ground, actually slightly backing up to the high ground.
Mm.
So I was taller than him. And I was emitting as much calmness and peacefulness as possible.
Yeah.
But the soju in me, the devil in me was saying, be aware, be ready, and please hit me.
Yeah.
So I can possibly defend, but
see if it works.
Yeah. I know it does work because, yeah. But I was just purely being calm because I was like, hey, you know what? I spent my whole morning at jiu-jitsu. I don't want to fight anymore. Like, I've just been rolling with guys who were stronger than me all morning. The last thing I want to do is fight.
Mm.
The last thing I want to do is fight. Please don't fight me, but I'd love to.
All right, man. Where do we go from here? I think is that anything else to add to the story, or is there anything we're missing here?
Maybe you can say a little thank you to you, Brad, for all the hard work you're doing. And like I said, you're immortalizing us, man. Like, we're forever going to be on iTunes. Apple's going to be there forever. Like,
that's true.
After the apocalypse, Apple's still going to be there, man.
This story, well, you say that, but, you know, one day you're going for a job interview and they're like, are you the same Joshua that was on that podcast talking about the soju devil? Honestly, man, there's no thanks needed. It's my privilege and honor to be able to do this. Really, it is. And I appreciate even just John sort of letting me just run with it. You know what I mean? Like, I have fun doing this. I have had a blast. I sit down with friends, like have a beer. We have dinner beforehand.
Awesome.
Let me actually, what I will say is to everyone out there, Josh bought me dinner tonight prior to this. So, you know, just keep that in the back of your mind when you're coming on.
Wait, listen, when Brad offered to pay, I said, Brad, it's disrespectful for you to buy, you to split dinner with me when you're spending your night immortalizing me, man. This is awesome, yeah.
No, I haven't. I'm throwing shade at everyone else, but I haven't done it at a time where we've, like, sat down for dinner. It's been after training or whatever, so it's we usually eat before and then we come in and have a chat.
It's not because I like to wine and dine people before they take me upstairs.
So yeah, right. Well, you could have just asked. You didn't need to play the long game.
But I gotta say thank you as well to Johnny for just being absolutely amazing. He's probably the best coach and best person you could imagine to lead us. And he doesn't take any time off. Every day he's on the mats. He's an absolutely amazing businessman and a person in general. So, Johnny, thank you so much.
On that note, do you want to sign us off?
What's the song? Thanks, Danny.
Thanks, everyone. Cheers.